Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me, Jack, who was making all sorts of rude gestures while I was trying to do that, and he was slightly distracting. Yay!
Yay.
Well, I didn't curse just then, so there's that.
Foiled again.
Wow. Foiled again. Thank you, Jack. Well, darn is what I usually say, right?
More or less.
Hey, Jack, guess what?
What's that, John?
This segment brought to you by Tactical Night Vision Company. The night is dark and full of terrors, or at least it used to be. But now we have the technology to fight the night, and TNVC is your one-stop shop for all your dark fighting needs. From the TNV PVS-14 Night Vision Goggle to the IR Patrol Thermal Monocular and everything in between, TNVC can outfit your defense against the dark arts. Doesn't matter if it's your lost keys, the enemy, or that little kid from down the street that likes to wander off. Ah, darn Pokemon Go. TNVC has what you need to find things in the dark. TNVC now with financing. Own or finance the night. So we've got a really interesting show lined up today. We have John Correa from Active Self-Protection joining us. John, how are you doing?
Hey, man, I'm awesome, dude. Every day's a holiday and every meal's a feast. How are you?
Oh, pretty good, man. See, I have to say that your enthusiasm and general attitude is incredibly refreshing compared to a lot of the other people in the industry that I deal with sometimes. So,
you know, man, I get to watch a lot of people deal with a lot of stuff and in my real life, and you know, you recognize how good you have it sometimes, and so it's hard not to have a good attitude.
Right. So talk about active self-protection. Talk about yourself. Who are you? What do you do? And then we will hop right into what we're going to talk about.
Well, active self-protection, I guess, started as a self-defense and firearms training company in Phoenix. Existed for 5 or 6 years, I guess, at this point. And what I'm known for now is people send me real-life surveillance videos of armed robberies, muggings, stabbings, assaults of all kinds, carjackings, that kind of stuff, and I do after-action reports on them.
Right.
So we do those via video, and we learn lessons. And in the last 4 years, I've watched probably 5,000 gunfights. I've narrated about 800 defensive encounters. Not all of those are gunfights. And, you know, you find patterns. So that's kind of my gig. That's what I'm known for. You know, we find those things. And you know, I still do training and those kind of things. We have a very thriving social media. I say we used to be, you know, we started as a self-defense and firearms training company because the social media has just completely overtaken the business. We have a very thriving Facebook community and a very rapidly growing YouTube channel.
Right, right. You guys have, well, let's talk about your YouTube channel for just a minute, because I, as somebody that does this for a living and someone who really understands what those numbers mean, your YouTube channel is incredibly popular right now.
Yeah, it's growing at a rate that, I mean, it's like having a tiger by the tail.
Yep.
Which I'm really excited about, of course. You know, we're let's see, last month, I just looked at last month's numbers this morning, and we had about 18 million channel views, 18 million video views last month.
Yep.
Which, I mean, for a channel of 190,000 subscribers is ridiculous.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's growing like crazy. And I think people are starting to resonate with this idea that I just bring them something to keep their self-defense in mind every day. We get used by police academies. I know at least 5 academies that use them. 1 post board that uses the videos in their CE for officers. Several military units, which is crazy to me, but they do. So I had the NRA annual meetings this last year, I had a SWAT cop come up to me and shake my hand and tell me that his sergeant turned him on to the channel because they use it in training. And I was like, wait, we gotta talk
right.
about that.
Right.
Because I'm not a SWAT cop and I've never been a SWAT cop. And how are you guys using them? And so the YouTube community is, I mean, it's just on fire right now. And that's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So you recently posted 10 observations that you had made after watching the 5,000 or so videos that you've reviewed. And if it's all right, I'd kind of like to talk about that a little bit, if you don't mind.
No, I don't mind at all. Let me get to my computer just so that I can put them up as well. And then that way I can, you know, at least discuss them intelligently.
Well, see, I'm really well known for, I don't know, springing show topics and doing prep work for the show during the show.
Well, awesome. Then we're on the same page.
Yeah, right? No, but I have found that, and this probably a lot of people will be like, oh, no, your show is horrible, dude. It would be better if you didn't do this. I've actually found the conversation goes better the less I try and script it ahead of time. And Jack's,
well, awesome.
Jack's just looking at me like, bro, you're lazy.
Well, I don't think scripts work for either one of us.
No.
We're not script people.
No, we're not. we barely read. So anyway.
I have them up here, and I mean, I can talk about them just generally, but if you wanted to make sure I got them all, I got it up, dude.
Well, yeah, no. I mean, the thing that I find interesting is that a lot of attention gets paid on certain skills and a lot of attention gets paid on certain equipment that is designed to address certain issues or whatever. And it doesn't seem to me, and I'd like to get your opinion, that the issues or things that people place importance on always end up being important in the real life incidents that we see over and over again. And like you said, there is a pattern, whether or not there are outliers to it. There are, but there is a general pattern overall.
There really is. You start to see the things that happen again and again and again. And I'm a fan of the percentages. I mean, obviously already, if we're talking about getting into a gunfight, we're talking about a very low percentage activity.
Right.
Most people will get through their whole life concealed carriers and not get in a gunfight. And we're grateful for that. You know, it's not
right.
our goal. It's not like, at least I think if you have a healthy psychology, your goal is not to get in a gunfight because, you know, you can die in those.
Right.
So, you know, but when we see them, in my opinion, have some patterns. So I want to prepare for the most likely things first. And then, you know, those outliers, they exist, but I want to have real chances and real good skills in all the stuff that's probable first. And then start worrying about the outliers because I feel so good about the statistics of the stuff that I know that I can start worrying about the minor stuff.
Right. So what are some repeatable things that you see?
Well, you know, the one that ruffles Jimmy's in the training community, the gun training community in particular, that I have said is, you know, in watching thousands of gunfights, I have seen exactly, for instance, 2 non-on-duty law enforcement officers have a gunfight that involved a reload.
Right.
And so, you know, man, I've been to classes and I've seen so much on the intertubes about reloads and about how this is the right way to do a tactical reload. This is the right way to do an emergency reload. This is the right way to do a speed reload. And much infighting about, you know, do you use the slide stop lever? Do you use the overhand? Do you use the slingshot? And my response to that is, in the 2 gunfights that I saw a reload happen in, those reloads did not materially affect the outcome of the gunfight. They ended up being administrative when they could have potentially been useful.
Right.
So So you go, okay, wait a minute. 2 out of 5,000 is what we call vanishingly small.
Yeah.
So, you know, to me, I look at that and I go, why are we wasting time in class? I might spend in classes that I teach, you know, if I get beyond, you know, basic pistol, beyond CCW, we get into, you know, defensive pistol craft of one kind or another. I might spend 5 minutes saying, okay, so if you need to have extra rounds in the gun, because we're going to do this, you know, 50, 80, 100 times during the class, you know, here's how you, I want you to practice getting more bullets in your blaster.
Right.
And then leave it, because it's just not a skill that we're going to need until we're in the most minutest minority, which I think is different than cops. You know, I mean, well, as a civilian.
Let me pause you right there, because we are going to have to go to break. So hold that thought, because I do want to hear the rest of this. Right now we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Sig Sauer, now with more options. We're not all the same, and our carry gun shouldn't have to be either. Sig Sauer gives you choices, and with more models than the Bible's got Psalms, it's never been easier to find a Sig Sauer that fits your needs. From the extremely versatile striker-fired P320 with modular grip frame, to the Legion Series P226, the single-stack P225A1, or the entry-level SP2022. Sig Sauer makes a model that's right for you. Just don't ask for a Callahan full-bore auto-lock. They don't make that yet. Sig Sauer, when it counts. So we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. And John, I'm sorry I interrupted you to pay for the show. You were saying that there is, or you were getting ready to say, that there is a difference between a civilian concealed carry context and a law enforcement context. Or at least I'm intuiting that's what you were about to say.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, there's a difference between a cop's gunfight and a non-sworn CCW gunfight. And that's what I was getting after. Is that a cop, their gunfight, by definition, has to end at a contact distance, somebody in handcuffs, unless he's dead, right?
Right.
He's going to pursue a gunfight. So if somebody shoots at him, he's going to draw his gun, he or she, you know, going to draw their gun, shoot back, and pursue that and keep shooting until that bad guy is incapacitated and in handcuffs. Whereas I am not a cop. My gunfight, if somebody starts shooting at me, is going to be to break contact. So it's going to be shorter, and it's going to have a different outcome. So I would expect to see more reloads in a police context, because they have to pursue the gunfight until the bad guy stops. I just have to pursue it until the bad guy lets me get away.
Right.
So, you know, that's one of the ones that I said is that I think that a real focus on reloads, whether they're tactical, emergency, whatever, is training time that's better spent on skills that I see that are necessary again and again and again.
Right. So what's your thoughts then on something that maybe we could be practicing with that time that happens a lot more frequently in a civilian context shooting?
Well, I think the thing is that those skills are not real sexy. They don't elicit people coming back to your intermediate and advanced training classes again and again.
You mean you don't want to spend hours working malfunction clearances?
Well, you know, the one that I see again and again and again, I mean, obviously, we're talking about gunfights here. We're not talking about all fights.
Right.
You know, you look at the Bureau of Justice statistics, 80% of assaults are simple assaults. So you're far more likely to need martial arts skills than or empty-handed skills combatives, however you want to say that. I mean, unless you're a guy who's built like Jack and everybody goes, I'm not going to attack that guy.
You would be surprised the number of people that start crap with Jack just
to are a lot of people that wanted the crown. Like, just woke up.
He's looking at that and they go, if I can beat him up, I can beat anyone up.
That's okay. The dude. I'm going to do 2 more shots of Jack Daniels, and I'm going over there to get me some of that. I don't know why. I've tried to talk him out of it.
Everybody wants some Jack.
Well, you know, you got to so you get through the, you know, those ones. We're talking about that 20% that are aggravated assaults that we need a gun. And I always say the 100%, if it's a gunfight, the 100% skill that you have is you have to reliably and as fast as you can get that gun out of the holster and present it.
Right.
And you're going to do that every single gunfight. That will happen every single time. So that skill needs to be something that is you have unconscious competence in, that you do without thinking about clearing your cover garment, without thinking about getting your full firing grip, without thinking about defeating any retention mechanisms, you know, any of that stuff. So that's something that thankfully we can learn pretty quick how we do it, especially if we set up, you know, we use a consistent carry method. But then we have to just practice and practice and practice and practice. Now, I know there's a lot of Instagram celebrity around, you know, having a you know, everybody's trying to break that 0.6 barrier of getting a shot on target or whatever.
Okay.
And I mean, it's a competition, right? A gunfight's a competition. You're competing against somebody trying to kill you for them not to kill you.
Right.
But being as fast as you can be in that arena is the first skill, because every single gunfight requires it. Not every gunfight requires firing the gun.
Right.
Because you're going to see some that the gun comes out, the bad guy, you know, goes, oh, no, I don't want to fight anymore, and he leaves. But then the next skill that you got to have is that first shot has to be absolutely reliable. That first shot, you have to put on target 100%. And so that draw and first shot has to be that combined skill that I think is beyond question. Because first of all, as a civilian especially, you are accountable for every round that leaves the gun. You don't have qualified immunity,
right?
Like a law enforcement officer does. And so if you kill somebody who didn't need killing, you shoot somebody who didn't need shooting, you're going to be held accountable for that. And the thing that I see again and again and again is, yes, we want to shoot to stop the threat, but man, I'm going to say in the 90s of percent, and that's just a guess at this point. I don't have that actual statistics, but my gut says 90%. Of the time, the first person who puts a shot in somebody else's meaty bits, they win. And some of that's because of the fibs factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the oh no, I've been shot, to be kind.
Yeah.
So getting that first shot to go where it's going to make him start thinking about doing something other than hurting you is those high 90s. And that's hard to do because, you know, in that you're going to move, you will move in a gunfight. I've never seen, well, I shouldn't say never. Seldom do I see somebody when the time comes to have a gunfight who stands stationary, draws, and puts shots where they belong. They always move.
I've seen a couple that have done it, and oddly enough, the ones that have done it, and I have a suspicion about this, were exceedingly effective when they did it. But I suspect that's because it takes a lot of training to overcome the natural inclination to get somewhere else.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think our soul says, get off this, you know, this X, right? Get off the attack place. And so, you know, drawing while you're taking that, you know, getting out of the danger zone and putting a shot where it belongs, that skill is very perishable. And so, you know, if there are skills that I tell people, those are the ones you just beyond have to have without any question, unconscious competence at, and be so good at that you can't miss. Those are the three that I'd use.
Okay. As far as some other shooting related skills or things like that, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, but what do you think about the frequency of malfunctions?
They happen. There's no question about that. But I do think that, you know, remember, what we see is that, in my opinion, is that the course designs in the civilian world today are influenced by what we saw in police handgun fights 10, 15, 20 years ago. And firearms today are a whole lot more reliable than they used to be, with some exceptions. You know, you get a gun that's a modern firearm and it's shooting good ammunition, your chances of seeing a malfunction are slim, but not none.
Mm-hmm.
So we do see them. I'll be real. I see them down in Brazil with Brazilian manufacturers pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells me something about quality control. You know, and ammunition selection and, you know, firearm maintenance and all those things. Although I wish I had more news story, an investigation with those individuals to say, how much did you maintain this gun?
Right.
And when was the last time it was shot, and what are you shooting out of it?
Right.
I don't have that information, hardly ever, unfortunately. But malfunctions do happen. I have a couple even of law enforcement gunfights where you see an in-fight firearm malfunction.
Yep.
And they're, you know, they're shooting modern striker-fired guns with good ammo. So stuff does happen. So knowing how to get the gun back in the fight when things go south is another skill that I think once your marksmanship is money, once you can do multiple targets, you know, multiple things. And I don't believe multiple targets on a range are because I'm going to have an OK Corral style gunfight. But to me, they simulate someone moving once I shot them.
Right.
And so, all right, great. I've got that. I'm able to put multiple shots into a target that I need to. I'm able to transition because they've moved and shoot them again because they're still a threat. Then that next skill after that is something went wrong in this gun. Even though I'm carrying a quality firearm, even though I have a good, you know, duty magazine in it, even though I've got good ammo, something went wrong, and so I got to fix it really fast
right.
because I don't have long.
We actually have to go to break here, so I kind of want to get your thoughts on maybe some other reasons why those malfunctions occur or don't occur and get your opinion. Right now we're talking with John Correa from Active Self Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of air rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we are talking with John Correa from Active Self Protection, and we were discussing malfunctions and in firearms, and you were talking about where you see those happen and some of the reasons. Let me ask you this: how often have you seen malfunctions that appear to have been user induced one way or another, like somebody's riding their thumb over the back of their hand and getting in the slide, or maybe their grip is compromised or something like that? Because something that I have noticed, and I'd like to see, you know, what you think as someone that gets to review a lot more video than I do, is a lot of malfunctions that occur from weird firing positions or just things like that, you know?
Yeah, you know, I very seldom have seen, you know, just that click when you wanted it to go bang because you had, you know, a bad primer in a defensive round.
Right.
That one is rare. What I tend to see, I think if there's one that I said, this is the one that I see more than anything, the user-induced malfunction is some kind of a limp wrist. And that happens most frequently because people are shooting unnecessarily with only one hand on the gun.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the skills that I think is a necessary skill that I see very seldom in classes, but I know that you have done some in your armed parent stuff, is getting rid of the stuff in your hands to get the gun out.
Yep.
And of course, in an armed parent context, you know, if you got an infant in your hand, you're not going to get rid of an infant in your hand. We get that.
Well, so, I mean, if we can have a conversation about that off air if you want.
Sure.
But that was actually an interesting thing where that's where I started. And that's not where I ended up after I really looked at the problems involved.
Think it is an interesting one. I think that you're going to have fights with moms all over the world.
I have a very compelling argument. Like I said, you know, and I've invited you out to class. I'm pretty certain at least once or twice. And I'd love to get you to come out at some point or another. But yeah, like you were saying, though, a lot of people, if they have something in their non-dominant hand and they access a firearm with their dominant hand, that non-dominant hand never makes it to the gun. Once whatever you start shooting with, that's what you tend to finish shooting with, at least in my experience.
I totally agree. And for the most part, I mean, I have one that was fairly recent on the channel where a man chased some armed robbers, which he shouldn't have, but and he was in a grocery store and he had a basket in his hand and he kept that basket with him with his groceries all the way through that gunfight. And I think that's, it's just because we have not learned that one of our things that we have to do is just get everything else out of our hands. And I, one that I see pretty regularly is people not dropping their cell phone. You know, and I know your smartphone is a valuable supercomputer in your pocket, but it's not that valuable. Drop that sucker and get in the fight and then pick up when your fight's over, you know?
Right.
So I do see malfunctions happen because people have a compromised grip on the gun, and because it's hard to get the gun out and they haven't made it to that stage of unconscious competence, so they fumble their draw, the gun is not quite in hand, and they use it with one hand, and then because of that, the gun doesn't cycle like it should.
Right.
That's probably the most common one I see.
Extremity hits seem to happen a lot too, at least in some of the ones that I've observed, which could also compromise the grip. The other thing too, I see a lot of bad guys' guns not working.
Thank God.
Right?
And it's true. You know, the ones that lose, thankfully, are, man, I think Greg Elifritz had a great article on this.
Yes.
In his department about the guns that they recover from people, you know, from criminals.
Yeah.
And how many of them were unloaded or loaded with the wrong ammunition or non-functional.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of times you'll see armed robbers that, you know, their sole intent is to use that gun as an intimidation tool. But of course you can't trust that. I mean, obviously
right.
we take that threat seriously, but yeah, we see bad guys' guns mouth a lot, and I wouldn't count on it. Of course, you know, you can't go, yeah, that gun's not going to work because I see bad guys kill good guys a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it does happen. And for those same reasons, you know, it's a crap gun, because they're picking it up cheap, you know, on the street. It's loaded with the wrong ammunition. It's, you know, not a quality firearm. They don't know how to shoot it well,
right.
Because they don't care to, you know. And of course, there are exceptions to that. You know, I've seen exceptionally skilled attackers, and that's a shame, but it does happen. So, of course, we prepare for the worst-case scenario and hope that he's incompetent.
So let's talk about that for a second. How a lot of people seem to have in their head the idea that the attacker they're going to run into is an inept crackhead with a Raven 25 caliber pistol.
Sure hope so.
Yeah.
If you ever have to.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick one, that'd be what I'd rather deal with. But you just kind of alluded to something. Do you see highly skilled attackers that are clearly trained, that have done, are competent? I mean, is that something that you observe occasionally?
You know, I think the thing that I observe more than a highly skilled attacker is a highly determined attacker.
Okay.
And those happen. And, you know, we say as defenders in a gunfight, my will to win is more important than my skill to win. You know, my will is more important than my skill. Now, I'm not saying skill's unimportant. That's the last thing that I would ever say. I mean, I train all the time,
right?
Because I want my skill level to be as high as it can. But a will to fight, a will to live, a will to overcome is most important. And I do see attackers with significant will to win. In fact, today's video on our YouTube channel was one that if it was a wimpy attacker, the victim probably would have made it, but that attacker had a real will to win the fight, and so he did. And that's unfortunate. So do I see skilled attackers? You know, occasionally you'll see some, but those are a lot of times in context that they're not random violence. You know,
yeah.
The ones that you see that are armed robbers in convenience stores or in the Walmart parking lot or whatever, those people are looking for targets of opportunity. They don't tend to be highly skilled. But when you start seeing targeted violence,
mm-hmm.
You start seeing, you know, somebody who was paid to attack someone's spouse or ex or something like that.
Right.
You know, somebody targeted for their position or their views or something like that. Then those are the attackers that tend to be highly skilled. I think the one that is maybe most clear and recent is the assassination of the Russian ambassador to Turkey.
Yeah.
And in that one, you can clearly see, though, he gave some tells, man. He touched his gun. He definitely was looking for it a few times. But when the fighting started, that guy knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
So that's where I tend to see him more than any other.
Well, and do you think that enough people are making a distinction between random violence versus targeted violence? As far as, I mean, and I understand that once the violence finds you, it's pretty targeted and it's pretty personal. But
it's very personal. Yeah.
You know what I mean, though, the difference between an opportunistic criminal versus like a process predator.
You know, I think we're starting to recognize that we can't do that. Most Americans probably, if they're going to be the target of violence, is probably going to be random violence. I think, you know, whether you like the terminology, sheepdogs, whatever, you know, those average people don't do things to get them in places that are going to be bad unless they're in a part of a very small cadre of people. But the potential for mass shooting, for a mass killer, says that, you know, that's targeted violence. Now, you may be a random part of that target.
Right.
But you are still targeted. And those are the kind of shooters as well that tend to be highly skilled. The killer in Orlando was a highly skilled shooter.
Yeah.
And a very competent killer. Whereas the shooter in the Burlington Mall mass shooting that was not long after that was not a highly skilled one, but he didn't need to be. It amazed me what an idiot with a stolen Ruger 10/22 could do.
Right.
So I think that we do kind of think about, well, wait a minute, what if I am targeted? And now me personally, I think about that in the perspective of my church family and targeted violence because of religious faith.
Well, hold that thought because we got to go to break and then we'll hop right back into that. Right now we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick to the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell, "Aziz, light!" ever again. Doesn't matter if you are shining a light at a potential threat or just helping your friends see through their eyelids. When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now, as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 30% off at the Surefire.com web store, everything except suppressors and batteries, by entering the discount code ALLTHELUMENS, that is ALLTHELUMENS, no space at the end of that, at Surefire.com. So we're talking with John Correa from Active Self-Protection. And you were bringing up a good point. You were talking about you were a little more concerned with targeted violence, specifically when you're thinking about your church family and the stuff you do with your church. How often do you think people don't recognize how just them living their lives can be a factor in some whack jobs? I'm going to go kill everybody because of X, Y, or Z.
Well, I mean, let's put a real fine point on it. I don't think that the revelers at Pulse Nightclub were real concerned with some targeted violence at them. Yet that happened that night. And I don't think most people think about it. I don't think most people think about, wait a minute, where am I at risk? Honest risk assessment is very rare in reality,
right?
Because we don't like to think in those terms, especially, you know, we live here in the United States. So if you live in South Africa, South Africans think about this a lot more because of their crime rate.
I have a buddy from South Africa that's a civilian that has been in three separate shootings.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't surprise me a bit.
Yeah.
I mean, carjackings there are and home invasions, incredibly common, and police don't care. So it's, you know, those folks have to do that. Here in the States, especially because over the last 20 years, our violent crime rate has gone down.
Right.
And so even though the media has said it's gone up, you know, we get these reports because if it bleeds, it leads.
Right.
But, you know, we're safer than we've been in a long time. And so most people don't really think about security or their own personal protection and where they might be at risk.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that most, I mean, for anybody who, you know, doesn't know who I am, my real life, I pastor a church in the Phoenix area.
Right.
And so we think about it. Now, we don't obsess over it, but we look at our risks and we plan for them appropriately, you know. And so we think about what could happen, where could that happen, where are our most likely dangers, and how we would deal with that. And some of those are, you know, interpersonal. So I tell people all the time, if they want to know what risk assessment looks like, ask someone who had to leave a violent relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had partner violence. That can go both ways, but most commonly we see that a woman who has to leave an abusive man, and now she's doing risk assessment every day.
Yeah.
You know, where could he hurt me? And I think if we don't have those threats that come right to us, we don't tend to do that.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate.
Speaking of risk assessment, one of the most useful, like, writings I've seen on that is actually the stuff Claude Werner has talked about on his blog. Incredibly useful for anyone that's interested in that, just, once again, tangential to this.
I mean, you should be reading what Claude writes because it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know, I will say this. People that know who Claude Werner is like an amazing litmus test for Clue. You know who Claude is. Good. You know what I mean? It's just like a very,
right,
very easy pass-fail question.
yeah.
What are some, I mean, we got 5 or 6 minutes left in the show. What are some other things that you would like people to consider, that maybe they don't? How important is it, or how many incidents have you seen occur that didn't need to occur if the individual had removed themselves from the situation?
More than I can count. Most important skill that it seems like everybody ignores is awareness. And I know that the SAW situational awareness is a little overused, but you know, we get that idea of being left of bang and knowing, wait a minute, am I at risk here? Can I de-escalate, escape, or evade this problem?
Yeah.
And that proactive mindset means that you don't have to react to the violence that comes at you.
Right.
And I see so many people in armed robberies. You know, an armed robber is in the act of robbing a store, and some idiot opens the door and walks right into it, like from outside. Oh, wait. Oh, gosh, I'm just going to lose my smartphone and wallet now because the guy's pointing a gun at me. But if I just looked through the glass before I came in there and went, nope, I'm going to go back to my car.
You should ask Craig Douglas about the time he walked in on a robbery in uniform and didn't realize he had until he was standing in the middle of it.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, and sometimes stuff happens, you know, you just get jumped, but awareness and an understanding of where those dangers are and how to see them coming. You know, I like to talk about stuff like, a few years ago, I like to take my wife and kids occasionally to a Diamondbacks game here in Arizona.
Right.
We left the Diamondbacks game and the stadium's downtown. We're walking. I got a wife and 4 kids. And, you know, we're walking and I see a couple of guys, and there's a lot of homeless down there who like to panhandle. I'm not afraid of homeless people. Part of my life as a pastor, I interact with a lot of people. But for some reason, they just gave me the heebie-jeebies. These particular guys talking and kind of looking around, and they just made my creep alarm go off.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just told my wife, hey, we're going to go across the street here because I saw maybe 40 yards off, 50 yards off. And she was like, why? And I said, because we are. And so we crossed the street, and we walked down the street about 100 yards, and I just kept my eye on things. And when we got done, we walked back across the street, and my wife, who is a wonderful woman, not exactly a self-defender,
mm-hmm.
And she said to me, wait, why did we do that? And I said, because those guys made my creep alarm go off, and I just didn't want to have any problems. And she was like, really? And I said, yeah, I don't know that we'd have had any problems, but I didn't want to have any problems. And so then we walked back to our car. We never had any problems. And I don't know if those guys would have been, but just avoiding the situation altogether was so easy that there was no reason not to.
Right, right.
And I think a lot of times we don't do that. And when we don't do that, we put ourselves in positions to get into fights and to get into deadly force encounters. And I think that if people just paid attention more and we're really committed to de-escalation, to escape, and to avoidance. You know, it's like, Jack, what you said earlier, right? Guy's going to go, man, I'm going to have a couple more shots, and I'm going to go get me some of that. And you go, listen, who raised that idiot to do that?
Right.
Society.
Rather than say, you know, and I know you as a guy who bounced for a long time, you know, you go, look, you're a master at trying to de-escalate problems. And I tell people in a regular world, not when they're bouncing or whatever, but, you know, you can solve a lot of problems with a handshake, with a, I'm sorry, man, let me buy your beer.
The My Bad 20.
Yeah, I have a
video. My Bad 20.
Yeah, where I talk about the My Bad 20 and how many problems that'll, like, stop. $20 is a lot cheaper than a lawyer, and it's a lot cheaper than bail.
A lot cheaper than the hospital stay.
Yeah.
You know, if people would just commit to that dude, hey, man, I screwed that up. My apologies. Even on the road, I see people, you know, I'm driving down the street, and like anybody else, I'll make mistakes on the road. You know, I change lanes too close to somebody or whatever. And even just a wave of, hey, man, I'm sorry, my bad.
Yeah.
Goes a long way to defusing tensions and can prevent road rage.
I'll tell this story, and then actually we're at the end of the show. I was down in Dallas helping Petty teach a class, and I put my indicator on to get into the high speed lane, and the guy in the high speed lane behind me sped up and flipped me off with both hands. as he drove past me.
Dedication.
And all I had done was put my turn indicator on, and I'm like, huh, the rules are different here. But
welcome to Texas.
Yeah, right? Hey, John, I really appreciate coming on the show today. If people want to find out more about who you are, what you do, where can they see your stuff?
Your probably best place to see the videos is the YouTube channel. So youtube.com/C/active self-protection, or just search active self-protection on YouTube.
Perfect.
We do a lot of stuff like you do on Facebook, where I curate, you know, links and discussions and stuff like that on our Facebook page. You can find our website too. It's activeselfprotection.com.
Hey, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries, dude. You be safe. I'll talk to you soon. All right.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. Hey, guys, make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com. Like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. And keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. We really appreciate it. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.